This is Patrick Daly and welcome to Interlinks. Interlinks is a program about international business and globalization and the effects these have had on our life, our work and our travel over recent decades. Today on Interlinks, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to delve a little bit deeper into the world of the supply chain. And why? Well, because the topic of globalization that we discuss on this program is underpinned and made possible by the international supply chains that function day in, day out to fulfill our material needs, including our food, our clothing, our medicines, and all the services that we depend on to make our life what it is, including the smartphone in your pocket, the cholesterol tablets you take, and the bottle of wine on your dinner table. So to do this, I'm joined by three colleagues of mine from the Society for the Advancement of Consulting, all independent consultants and thought leaders in their own fields, for this supply chain informal chat, or tertulia, as I like to call it. So my guests are Art Koch, president of Arthur Koch Management Consulting in Miami, Florida. Welcome, Art.
Hello.
Dave Gardner, founder of Dave Gardner Biz, a consultancy based in the San Francisco Bay Area in California. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you.
And Diane Garcia, president of Lorraine Consulting based in Portland, Oregon. And welcome, Diane.
Good morning, Patrick.
Welcome and thanks for being here with us today, guys. And thanks especially to you guys from the West Coast for what I think is 7 a.m. For you as we record this. So, Art, if I can start with you, just like globalization itself, international supply chains are going through a period of flux due to many factors, as we know, technological, ecological, sociopolitical, and so on. And indeed, because of the recent processes such as Brexit, trade tensions between the US and China, and the arrival of COVID, you now hear the term supply chain been bandied about by politicians in the newspapers, TV, radio presenters on CNN and BBC and Fox News and so on. So Art, could you set out just for us in simple terms what supply chains are? What are the components? And why do you think they're in the news so much these days?
To me, the supply chain is from taking raw material out of the earth or recycling material and moving that through the manufacturing or the value-added processes through distribution and getting it to your customer, all the different nodes of transportation along the way. And then once the customer uses it and they're done using it, getting it back into the recycling process. Why I think it's in the news today is that over the past 20 years, our dependency on very long supply chains have increased due to the globalization of the world. And as COVID has kind of moved through the world economies, we've seen our supply chains stressed or taxed, and we've seen shortages, either knee-jerk shortages due to consumers being nervous and stocking up on things, or real shortages due to factories being shut down due to COVID in their environment. So that's turned everybody started listening and they started going, really, what's this supply chain thing? And now it's part of our normal discussion.
Thanks, Art. I think that sets us up nicely for the rest of the conversation. Thanks for that. So I think what we'll do first, we'll have a chat maybe about some of the operational short-term challenges the companies are experiencing right now and what they're doing about them. And then we'll go and have a look at maybe some more strategic items. So Dave, what kind of acute challenges have you been noticing around the place among your clients?
I think one of the big issues that drives this whole process is the forecast. And, knowing how much you're going to need in this COVID world, what is demand going to look like? Here in the U.S., 70% of our economy is based on consumer spending, which is just a phenomenal amount. When that consumer spending drops off, so does demand, and so does the need for supply chain. So as Art was saying, one of the issues, of course, is what I call this just-in-case inventory that people want, not just in time, but overconsumption of demand, which, of course, carries with it a cost. So I think that's in this post-COVID world, that's really one of the big issues. Government spending for capital equipment, like Art and I were just talking about a fire truck company that we both have experience with, government spending is way off, because tax revenues are way off. So this whole world is kind of in a bit of an upheaval. And with that, I think I'll turn it over to someone else to talk about this.
Yeah. So, Diane, what are you seeing as kind of acute issues with clients of yours around the place?
Well, I will definitely echo what Dave just mentioned about the forecasting side of things. I've heard, and I'm working with clients who are, you know, really concerned about their forecasting tools and are they responsive enough? Are they anticipating what they need? And with the COVID, some of my clients saw, you know, massive spikes where they were not prepared with the supply. So working with their suppliers, trying to pull that inventory overseas and trying to pull it from locations that, you know, they were not prepared to has been a challenge overall. I will add on as well in the warehousing realm is I do know that I'm working with clients, and I know it's been a popular topic of interest, which is how do companies utilize their warehousing space, and do they have enough space to handle their requirements, and how do they leverage efficiencies through their warehousing? So it's a hot topic, and I'm sure Art and Dave had, you know, comments along there. And then the last thing I will add, Patrick, before we go forward is just how big of an impact the increase in e-commerce has been on my clients. Okay. So that one has been a major trend throughout each of my client projects.
Okay. So one of you, I think it was Art, mentioned this thing regarding government spending and tax revenues. You want to elaborate a bit on that? Do you mean that the spending and revenues are down in the U.S.? Is that what you're seeing?
Oh, substantially. You know, if people are out of work, they're not paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Yet government spending, I was talking to a buddy of mine in Chicago last night, and he was saying that in Chicago, the last thing in the world they ever want to do is try to lay off employees when they don't have demand for the employees, because they're all union folks.
Yeah.
And we were discussing the private sector versus the public sector. And in the public sector, when a contraction is necessary, we tend to respond to it. In government, they tend not to do that, but their revenues are way off. Sales tax revenues. Dan was saying last night that he used to send a couple of $1,000 a month to the state of Illinois in sales tax. He said last month he sent $50. So think about that, $50 versus $2,000. And that's not an aberration just for his business or his industry.
Mm-hmm.
This is happening across the board. So this has to be affecting supply chains. If demand is not stimulative, then we have a pretty serious issue.
Mm-hmm.
To deal with. We'll run out of cash.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll come back to that. We'll talk about maybe what the Fed is thinking and what Congress are thinking they're going to do with regard to priming the economy, if they are going to do that, or what the current state of play is. But I just want to come back a little bit to this issue of the forecast. So I've come across a situation with a company in consumer pharma, and they have several products going on at the same plant. And one product, because of COVID, is through the roof. So their demand for it has grown by something like 60%. So it's related to, you know, treating fever and so on. And another product, which is more of a kind of a cosmetic product, because people are not going out. Their main markets for this are in places like Brazil and Africa and Saudi Arabia and places like this. People are not going out, and therefore the demand for this product has gone through the floor. So it's as if the whole forecasting thing is just totally out the window. So there's no forecasting system is going to be able to deal with that. Are these types of things that you guys have seen happening as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And any insights into how people are coping?
Well, you know, what one of my clients are basically having a sales and operation planning meeting every 48 to 72 hours to attack the changes. And they're saying, well, we need to improve our forecast. We need to improve our forecast. And I had a tremendous debate. I think it was in
April with the CEO of a business. And I said, the problem you have is not your forecast being inaccurate, because forecasts are always inaccurate. The issue is the length of your lead times. Mm-hmm. You know, we had 15, 20 years of very predictable demand, and we got complacent and we let our lead times stretch out. Now that we're having, you know, this huge disruption, we're seeing the impact that lead times have when your forecasts are inaccurate due to this disruption. So with my clients, this one in particular, we put in sales and operation planning, basically rinse and repeat every 72 hours, going through looking at the changes, because no system can respond that fast.
Forecasting as they know it is just not the tool to use anymore, is it? I mean, you cannot forecast in this kind of situation with rolling lockdowns, and you don't know when they're coming. You don't know when they're going to end. You don't know how long they're going to stay, so on.
Yep. And it was, you know, they were getting information from the sales group for when a factory was going to open, and it was always wrong. Yeah. And so they just had to keep pushing it out. And everybody's forecast or their swag on it was very, very optimistic. So we're taking what people said and lopping 25% off of it and then rinsing and repeating. Then you saw areas within the medical field that were just skyrocketing, and you had to dig into the bill of materials and find out what areas did those parts impact and do the opposite to them. So it was manhandling it.
Okay.
Then you throw in the things with the illness moving through the society that overwhelmed people. And it's been taxing on supply chain individuals and leadership in businesses to handle this much transformation or this much disruption at one time.
Yeah. And then maybe coming back to this issue of money and people's income and so on, and the discontinuity that may introduce into the supply chain. In Europe, essentially, there has been a kind of a breakthrough, a kind of a Hamiltonian moment in Europe, whereby the European Central Bank is going to inject a huge stimulus into the European economy. And also, it's the first time that it's being done at a European level. So we never had, if you like, a fiscal union to go with our currency union. So it's the first time we've seen the start of a fiscal union. But the United States is both a currency union and a fiscal union, and you print your own currency and you can print as much of it as you want. So do you anticipate that the Fed and through Congress are going to flood your economy with money in the coming months to keep it going over the next 12 to 24 months?
I think it's a really difficult political issue here. Republicans don't want to do deficit spending any more than they have to, so they're going to be more constrained. And while Democrats under Joe Biden are probably going to want to provide some relief, so it's a really difficult issue. I had thought we would do something before the election. But there was not enough will between the two political parties to do that. So very, very, very tough issue. There's a lot of people that are suffering. Let me give you an example of a supply chain issue. If you think about food, restaurants had just begun to open here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they were at 25% capacity and then getting up to 50% capacity. Well, now all of a sudden with COVID exploding again, they're going to shut down indoor dining. And so a lot of restaurateurs are saying, my God, we just bought inventory to support what we thought the demand was going to be, because people are tired of staying home. And now they're thinking about all the waste that they're going to have of all the produce and other things. And it's a really difficult situation for these solopreneurs that run these restaurants. Very difficult.
Diane, another thing I've been seeing, I just want to run this past you. So guys and gals have been complaining about restrictions on business travel. And it kind of surprised me as well. What's the issue? And the issue seems to be, one, the qualification and validation of suppliers, whether of materials or equipment, and also the repair, maintenance, and commissioning, particularly of new production lines and so on. Have you come across this issue among your clients, and any feedback in regard to solutions and how people are getting around it?
Well, certainly with the restrictions and not traveling, it's been doing more with less in general. I don't know that my clients are, you know, the discussions we're having around this is what, how can we be creative and how can we address these particular situations? The really big issue is how. So in general, I would say if we can come up with solutions around how we can maybe limit these repairs or how can we maybe work virtually. I know that a lot of my conversations with clients in general, you know, we've been used to in-person, we've been used to kickoff meetings in projects and in general, it's been easier said than done, but it has been somewhat of an easy transition to a remote working and really prioritizing what should be done in person.
Yeah.
And deciding, you know, what qualifies now as in person.
Yeah, I've seen some in some situations, and maybe Art or Dave might want to jump in on this. I've seen technology, say, for example, where an engineer who's remote, who's the person with the knowledge with regard to, say, a specialized piece of equipment, is mm-hmm. directing a person who's already on site with regard maybe to maintenance or some other validation or verification. Have you seen that type of technology being deployed among your clients?
Yes and no. The issue that I'm seeing is people are scrambling to find what I call tier 2 and 3 suppliers or sub-suppliers that are more localized. And with that, a lot of times that those suppliers don't have some of the technical resources bigger suppliers have. Yeah. So they're scrambling to work through some of the engineering details or the first piece, the ISR requirements. And a lot of that is face-to-face discussions. And they might only be a couple states away in the United States, mm-hmm. but you cannot necessarily get there. Or they could be in Canada, which is only maybe from, if you're in northern part of the United States, it could be 50 or 75 miles away and travel restrictions. So they're struggling with the procurement team and the SQAs to get in to have those really fine-tuned, nuanced discussions where you almost have to pick up a piece and show exactly what's happened. I've been on meetings where they're literally doing it on Zoom, where they're holding them up, showing it, and with pencils and, you know, and calipers and everything going through it. But there's still that element of going out to the machine with a group of 4 people looking at what's going and pulling a part off the machine and inspecting at that point in time. That's missing. And we're struggling with that. And I've been using the term people being overwhelmed. Dave brought up the changes in demand. You have this whole back end of supply chain that's trying to manage that. Then you have another group that's trying to ramp up other suppliers and bring them in. And they're taxed and overwhelmed. And I'll throw this in and I'll be quiet. And you throw in the aspect of the schools being closed and families struggling with childcare and elder care and this disruption at work. They're stressed. And I'm impressed with what we've done. You know, you look at what's been done and you set back in 5-10 years, we're going to look at and we're going to go, wow, what was accomplished? But then you look at some of the negative inputs, it's like, it just speaks to the resilience of people around the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we'll zoom out a little and we'll come up a bit higher level and maybe look at some of the strategic issues that are arising after that kind of journey through some of the acute operational issues. So I'm beginning to see people paying more attention to their strategic supply chain relationships. And you kind of touched on that there, Art, when you're talking about, you know, people looking closer to home for solutions for things that they have up to now got from very far away. So what are you guys seeing in terms of either the solidifying of supply chain relationships or more attention to the ones that are truly important and the changes that are going on in the way people are bringing things maybe a bit closer to home? What are you seeing there?
Yes, absolutely. I've seen where there is a new understanding of what a partner is through early on. a couple of my clients were saying, let's delay accounts payable, stop parts from coming in. And it was just pushing suppliers over the edge. As the owner of those businesses or the CEOs started talking, they started realizing what they're doing. And now they're adopting more of what Toyota has done for years, the partnership aspect. Yep. And another thing that I've seen is the acquisition of a couple really big acquisitions with my clients buying suppliers to where they're starting to integrate them in because the supplier needed an influx of cash. And at the same time, I always say you want to get a supplier partner that makes you better and makes your services better for your customer. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing is people starting to do these joint ventures or buying one another. And I started seeing that in the past 30 days. I've seen a couple acquisitions that way.
Interesting. Diane, any take on this from your side?
Yeah. What I'll add is that, working with, like I mentioned, on the warehousing side, working with my clients who are, deciding potentially they do not have the space or based on, if current trends persist, they will not have the space in the near term future. Reaching out to their partners, like a 3PL or 4PL, has been critical, trying to share information, trying to analyze information so they can share great insights, I think, has been one of the takeaways. And how do we share information? Does it need to be more automated? Does it need to be, quicker? Like Art was mentioning, an S&OP process that is happening, every day or every other day or, within hours, trying to spread that information as quickly as possible. So yeah. I think it's who do you trust and are you willing to share that information and how are you doing so and are you effective at it? Mm-hmm.
I think the current situation is a great opportunity for 3PL, 4PL logistics service providers to actually step up and to demonstrate to their clients what they really can do. Because I think often, and I've worked on both sides of that equation, both as the advisor to the manufacturer, as well as being an advisor to the logistics service provider. And too often it's viewed in a simplistic, transactional way, which doesn't benefit either side, and it's hard for them to get out of that. And I would imagine that in the course of this crisis, in some cases, they're going to learn a lot about each other, and those relationships are going to become more solid, I would think. So, Dave, you mentioned earlier this idea of just-in-case inventory, and that kind of brings into play the 3PL, the third-party logistics service provider, because people don't have spare warehouses sitting around beside their factory. So they need to find people in the logistics services business who are going to help them with this. What have you been seeing there in terms of this just-in-case inventory and its growth at the moment?
That's probably an older concept that I've seen here in the U.S. Again, because they don't have accurate forecasts, since they don't have dependable forecasts, you bring parts on board. The idea of adding warehouse space to me is kind of repugnant because it means that your efficiencies have gone down. And so you've got a lot more stuff available to do things. There's a carrying cost of having all that inventory. I don't know what the current estimate is of that. They used to say it was about 30% a year on raw materials. So is that still a valid figure, Art and Diane?
Yeah, it depends on the industry, but anyway, from 38% to 58% I use with my clients on carrying cost of inventory.
38% to 58% Wow. Yeah. So that's a really, really big penalty. I did want to make one other point. Foxconn is one of the great outsourcing companies in the world of electronics.
These are the guys who assemble iPhones.
Yeah. But iPhones is one of their product lines, but they also do a lot of capital equipment in the semiconductor capital equipment industry. And so they're a very sophisticated company. And they were building a huge plant in Wisconsin to bring online and create jobs. And my understanding is that they started the process and it's never going to get completed. Mm-hmm. So there's some real challenges with saying, let's bring low-level components or low-level items here to do it cost effectively, like building iPhones. You have to be very strategic about what you intend to do and what kind of jobs that you can create.
And the sub-supplier network underneath that to feed that.
Yes.
Because that's, I've had a couple clients, they run to go, you know, insource some items. And I kept saying, whoa, where are you going to get the parts? Where are you going to get the material from? And they hadn't thought about that. And I said, let's work with getting those suppliers regionally or closer to us, build that network before you insource it, or go at a smaller rate to where they can figure out their process.
Yeah. And Art, I've told you this story before about the pharmaceutical manufacturer based here in Europe who had their API coming from an Asian country, and they hit the buffers around March, April, whereby the government, the local government in the Asian country, imposed an export ban. So these kind of situations, and I know you've been talking a lot about the kind of reshoring aspect of the changes that are coming. So do you see a relationship between those two things, with companies getting caught out that way? They're going to be thinking hard about reshoring, about looking for dual supply closer to home?
Yeah. Yes. I don't know how to elaborate more, but I see that happening. And I see,
I guess it's inevitable, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
So, well, guys, you know, time flies when we're having fun. So the clock is where the clock is. So it's been a pleasure talking to you all. Many thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Dave.
You're
very welcome. Thanks, Diane. Thanks, Art. And thanks, Dave. And thanks also to our listeners. And remember that if you would like to know more about how I can help you to formulate and implement international business strategies that deliver, please check out my blog on albalogistics.com. My Twitter at #AlbaLogistics can pick up my book, International Supply Chain Relationships, on Amazon, Google Books, or Apple Books. Thank you for listening, and keep well until next time.